It's nice to see so many devoted souls this morning. I thank you for coming out. Rather than sleeping in or perhaps spending this hour at Starbucks reading the New York Times. I also want to thank Lori Goodman and John Sanders for their participation in the service, and especially to Billy Parker for handling the sound, setting up the equipment, and hopefully giving you a good audio experience as we get into the actual podcast excerpts. If anybody had an excuse to sleep in this morning, it was Billy, because he and his band were playing in the Holiday Stroll last night. So thank you, Billy. You may have heard the story of the UU who was out walking in the woods and came to a fork in the trail, and there was an arrow on a sign that pointed in one direction, and the words were carved into the wood, "Heaven." There was an arrow pointing down the other path, and the words carved into the wood were "discussion of heaven." And without nary a pause, this UU headed off looking forward to the discussion. We laugh at jokes like this because of the underlying truth. We UUs seem to prefer the path of exploration and questioning rather than seeming certainty through faith. At some early age, we begin to question and continue doing so for the rest of our lives. It's a lifelong pilgrimage. While we cherish our individual right to define our own beliefs, I find it ironic that we spend relatively little time discussing our beliefs with each other. We listen to sermons, we read, we think, yet we don't really articulate the result of all this input and processing. Those of you who are in covenant groups have more of an opportunity to do so, yet that's a relatively small percentage of the congregation. The hubbub of coffee hour isn't really conducive to relaxed and deep conversation, although it has been tried. During my time in Dallas, one of the ministers at the First Unitarian Church posted a banner in one corner of Channing Hall, which was where congregants gathered for coffee after the service. The banner read something like, "All who want deep conversations gather here." As I recall, it didn't work too well. A yearning for such meaningful conversations was one of my motivations for starting the Be Spiritual podcast. But before I elaborate on this and my other motivation, let me explain the term podcast, since our diversity includes familiarity with technology, or lack of. Driving home following church today, you may turn on your radio and listen to any number of programs broadcast by the many radio stations in this area that your receiver can receive. Well, a podcast is similar to a radio program, except that you listen to it through your computer or a music player like an iPod. An important distinction between radio and a podcast is that you can listen to a podcast whenever you want. The program is stored on a computer somewhere out in the internet, and like looking at a website, you can access the podcast program at either time, at any time, either to play it on your computer or to download it to your music player. One other point, podcast is a fairly generic term and originally referred to an audio program. Increasingly, people are publishing video podcasts, which are also called vidcasts. But the Be Spiritual podcast, which I'm talking about, is purely audio. With that, I think you're technically literate for our purposes, and I won't risk going any further and putting you to sleep. Meaningful conversations about our spiritual journeys and beliefs. As I said, that was one of my motivations for starting the Be Spiritual podcast. My other motivation was evangelism. The internet enables ideas to spread and people to connect in ways that cross the historic boundaries that have defined and separated communities. The Unitarian Universalist Association reports our membership worldwide at around 160,000 adults. 160,000, compared with roughly 220 million adults in the US. I've been a UU for over 25 years now and remain perplexed that our membership isn't larger. One of the reasons must be our lack of visibility. If the Be Spiritual podcast can bring our stories to some who otherwise would not hear about us, it will be a tremendous success. In choosing the name Be Spiritual, I sought something that would not just preach to the converted. Hopefully, the name Be Spiritual appeals to more than just UUs. I don't recall exactly where my idea for the podcast first crystallized or when, yet I can say it fermented for a couple of years. I recorded the first conversation with Ellen McCormick in February of 2008, yet it wasn't until this last May, well over a year later, that I posted the first episode on the internet. 10 episodes are currently online, and more are in production. I have a pretty consistent flow going, from interviews that I'm editing, to conversations being scheduled, to people being recruited. And this is not in any way exclusive. So if any of you want to share your stories, please let me know. Amazingly, with very little publicity, the number of downloads is over 800. 827 as of this morning. Most people are listening on the computer through the Be Spiritual website. However, an increasing number are listening and downloading through iTunes. Now, one more bit of technology, if you're not familiar with iTunes. It's the software that is used to synchronize music and podcasts between someone's computer and their iPod. And the iPod is the brand name of Apple's line of MP3 or music players. And it's the most popular in the market by far. So that makes Apple the largest distributor of podcasts in the world. And they make it very easy to publish podcasts. So with that prologue, let's shift now to the content of the Be Spiritual conversations and the themes that have emerged. What I have heard is that we ask spiritual and religious questions at an early age, and we're not satisfied with the answers we hear. This may be triggered by a tragic event. For Ellen McCormick, it was the death of her father. Or it may be something disturbing about the religion. For Bob Keating, he was deeply troubled by the story of God asking Abraham to kill his own son. Sometimes our questioning gets us into trouble, as Tess George found out.
I was in seventh grade, and we were learning about the Immaculate Conception, mm-hmm. the Virgin Birth. And I said, well, that's an interesting story, and that's an interesting metaphor. And I wonder why the church told that story, that a woman became pregnant without having sex. I wonder what that means. And the nun said, it means that she got pregnant without having sex. And I thought, oh, come on.
And how old were you at this time? You were in seventh grade?
Yeah, I was about 13, probably 13 or 14, yeah. And I thought, oh, please. And I said, you know, that's impossible. And they were furious. And I was surprised. Yeah. Like, I really was kind of, I thought, really? Like, you're going to really? This is going to be, like, a big thing? And so they were furious that I questioned it. And I thought, right there, I just thought, I can't do this. And I told my mother that, I can't do this. If I have an idea and that's wrong for me to just say, I think the story's a metaphor and they're going to just treat me like that was a huge sin, I can't be a member of this religion.
Once we've left the religion of our upbringing, we often disengage from organized religion entirely. For many of us, it's our children who prompt us to search for a church. And the religious education program we offer our children is a source of great value and pride.
Well, having children changes your outlook on things. And growing up, I felt that I missed out on being able to be a something. Because I definitely knew that we weren't Christian.
Mm-hmm.
But we were Jewish, but I didn't really know anything about it too much. So I felt growing up that I didn't have an identity. And in this world or in school especially, people, they are something. Or,
right.
Particularly in elementary school, it's very important to be, well, I'm, Protestant, or I'm Lutheran, or I'm Catholic, or I'm Jewish. And
mm-hmm.
So for my own children, I really wanted them to be a something.
Until my daughter at about age 4.5 or 5 came home singing, Jesus loves me, yes he does, and wondering why she was going to go to hell, because it was very clear she was not attending church services on Wednesday night when the other children did, and she wasn't attending church services on Sunday, and she knew that she was different in some, not to make a pun, in some fundamental way, and we were living in the hotbed of the Bible Belt. And so we went on the search for church.
Do they face any societal pressure from their peers or neighborhood that the church here is a counterbalance for them?
I think definitely that's one of the reasons why we brought them in the first place. We weren't particularly looking for a spiritual aspect for ourselves, my partner and I, but we were concerned that they might not see other families like their own. So we hoped, and it's been true, that if we came here and introduced them to this accepting community, and there happened to be a few other gay or lesbian parents in the congregation, and they could identify with their family, with those families as well, that we're all the same, we're all different kind
right.
of thing. And that's definitely been true. So that's worked out well for us. That's what we were looking for.
Well, what's wonderful about it is it also embraces their creative spirit and learning and acceptance and giving them the tools that they can understand the world around them in a very free and creative way. And then, they, as adults, they can figure things out on their own as well. So that was very appealing. And then looking at the RE program and how it encouraged the individual growth of what is true to you, even for kids, was very refreshing.
We do such a phenomenal job. These kids get a worldview because religion is such it's a cultural construct. There's a little alliteration there, but it's a cultural construct. And people would live within those boxes. They live within the fence of their religion. That's who they see on Sunday. That's what their belief structure is. And when they go to school, they bring that belief structure with them. And we provide for our kids an opportunity to look at world religions from the position of neutrality. Because we're not invested in any one of them being right or wrong. And I think that's very, very powerful for these kids, not only as an intellectual process, but just it gives them tools for life of being in the big world. Then we could talk about sex education. Oh, my goodness. I mean, what we do is just, it's extraordinary. And these kids are prepared to live their lives in ways that I think that other children could be but aren't because of the restrictions of schools, but mostly because of the restrictions in their own religious denominations. So I think the world of our RE program. It gives them space to be who they are. And that includes their expressions of their sexuality. And there are not many places that those kids get to do that and talk about it in an authentic way and in a way that's safe for them.
As Patricia Rose, the voice you just heard, noted in my conversation with her, we often come for our children but stay because we find ourselves nurtured. Of course, not all of us come just because of our children. We're on a spiritual journey ourselves, one that takes us by way of many wayposts: theist, humanist, pagan, atheist, Buddhist. A unique and wonderful aspect of Unitarian Universalism is that it's a melting pot. We're not asked to pledge allegiance to a single belief or dogma. Rather, our UU principles provide a foundation for constructing a spirituality that's uniquely suited to each of us, yet one that embraces all of us. We can retain aspects of our early religious upbringing while holding the door open for ongoing exploration.
How would you describe your religious views today?
Wife and I, Hillary, have maybe not the same religious statement, but we do have a sort of a core of picture is that our oldest granddaughter, who's 11 now, when she was about 4, we asked a question, and don't remember, neither one of us remember what it was, and she said, "Me can't know." We began exchanging that, modified it a bit, and it is unknowable. That's my sort of stance in terms of ultimate questions, and so that's what, I don't really call it an agnostic that I don't know. For me, I feel it's unknowable. I think there are multiple ways of understanding the mystery
right
now, and that's at this point in time, sort of sufficient that we can't know.
I would describe, I really hate to put a label on this, but I think of myself as a humanist. I really do believe that our salvation is in ourselves, and we have to make it work. I also believe, and perhaps this goes back to the fact that I confronted death at a very early age, and I really did have to confront it then, that I don't think there's anything after death.
Does the concept of a God have any meaning to you?
The concept of a God doesn't have any meaning to me. I don't, first of all, let me say that I don't know. Now, I would say this, that under my own definition, and it may not be, certainly isn't other people's, because the word spirit is in it. I am a spiritual person, and I have to use that word because, frankly, I can't think of any other word that works. I'm awed by the world around us. I am awed by what's out there in the universe. I'm awed by what came before us and what probably will come after us.
I feel like I have a firm and solid connection to a higher power. I think because I've developed a concept that is really very personal. It feels like in me and around me, always present. I've worked with this a lot in making this connection, like I said, because I really needed it for my recovery. But through that, I've also really developed that sense, when I started to feel it, and I can feel it, and that's an absolute truth, if I stop for a moment and call upon that energy, then I can feel it.
You've used the term higher power, and you've used the term God. Do you feel comfortable using God as a description for your view of a higher power?
Sometimes. It's an easy word because I grew up with it. Every so often I find that I hit a wall with it because I say it and I kind of flinch a little bit. But for lack of a better word. And higher power doesn't always seem to fit either.
You've said a couple times that your leanings are atheist. So mm-hmm. how does an atheist define spirituality? Or how is an atheist spiritual?
Well, as I said, I think it has a lot to do with place. It has a lot to do with connection. It, you know, the principle of, you know, the interconnectedness of all life, to me, is kind of fundamental. I think that a lot of what I believe and try to practice in terms of the way I relate to the world, the way I relate to people, in one way or another, emanates from that idea that we are all connected. I don't see a need or a place for a God in that. For me, it's just enough to look at the world and go, wow. You know, that's enough.
I really think that I get most of my spirituality from my relationship with other people.
Hmm.
Yeah.
The connection.
I know this probably sounds a little corny, but I think that transcendent at its core is love. I think it is
right.
Love. And so I think when you feel love for another person, you know, whether it's intimate love or it's friendship or it's agape love, or when you have a connection with another person, for me, that is a way of experiencing divinity. So I experience spirituality through relationship.
Is there a definition of God that works for you?
I don't like the word. I think the word has too much garbage. It's too much baggage. You know, I can say, you know, asking where do I think the universe came from, or something like that.
So
is more meaningful to me. And basically, I don't know. I certainly the mystical is just fascinating. It's just incredible. How does a carrot grow? Did anybody ever figure out? No, they never figured out how a carrot grows. How do you put that seed in there that big and this yellow thing comes out? It's magical. For me, it doesn't really matter where it came from, but the fact that it is so incredible. Watch a little child on the floor in your room. How could anything be more spectacular than that?
I'm hearing you say,
what do you want?
We ought to focus on the present life.
We ought to focus on this and the beauty of it, and we ought to focus on saving it.
Another theme from our stories is the importance of living meaningful lives while we are here on this planet. We feel compelled to make the world better. We work for social justice, and we're proud to be part of a faith tradition with a long history advocating for equal rights and respecting the inherent worth and dignity of each person.
The world that we live in now has huge problems. War, poverty, ignorance, stupidity, and they're two different things. You know, all the environmental issues and everything. And you know, I just feel that one can't just let it go by. It's not going to let us go by. So we have to take a stand, and we have to try to fight for social justice issues and environmental issues and so on. And, you know, it's something I grew up with. I can't remember a time when I didn't feel this way. As I said, growing up in South Africa in the shadow of the Holocaust and everything, the issues of social justice were always, always part of my life.
As I told you, I was raised Catholic, so Jesus said, whatsoever you do to the least of my brothers, that you do unto me. And I don't, at this point, believe that Jesus was God's son
in the way that the story is told, but I do think he was a prophet, and his words, most of them I still like to live by, because I think they were pretty good guide for living. I think that every person has, well, in Unitarianism we would say everybody has inherent worth and dignity,
right?
Because I think everybody has the divine within them and deserves to be treated that way. And I think that we live in a society that doesn't treat a lot of people that way at all. So the social justice work that I do, you know, just tries to even the playing field a little bit, and tries, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to help create a world where everybody's treated like they have inherent worth and dignity.
Listening to our individual stories of why Unitarian Universalism is important is one of the most gratifying and inspiring parts of my conversations.
Ah, the elevator speech.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, I actually did some drafts a number of times, you know, on it. At the moment, drawing from that, first thing I would say is welcome. And I would say that this is a place that by our tradition, by our values, and hopefully by the way in which we enact, is to honor people from with the widest of ideas and thoughts, and to support them in that process. And so we don't have a creedal test. I think you find a place that will honor your mind, your heart, and your soul, and ask you to be join with us in a mutual journey to understand ourselves, our world, and to make manifest a better world.
It's a good place to explore. It's a good place. You can be yourself. You can take whatever your ideas are about religion or non-religion, sexuality, spirituality, just about anything, and you can go to that place and feel comfortable, I think.
Well, for me, one of the very important things about this church is the idea of community. For many years, I've existed sort of on my own, obviously with my family, but out there, atheist, down on all kinds of religions, and also not having much of a social environment. When we found this church, we found a real community. And that was certainly a very important part of it. And a community in the sense of meeting with people who have similar views in the world. Certainly not all the same. It's not certainly not monolithic. But and a community of people that is very much open to all kinds of views in the world and all kinds of lifestyles, is tolerant of all kinds of people. And I never knew such a community existed, and it was a wonderful thing to find it. Our understanding of the world is changing every day, and the fact that the UU Church is not bound in a dogma that, you know, that is a kind of a snapshot of thinking that says we're going to force everything into this way of thinking about the world, but instead says, well, this is a world that changes and evolves all the time. Let's just go with it.
Right.
You know, what more can we learn about it? I think is wonderful.
My daughter calls me the church lady, my older daughter, because she says, you're always there. And I used to say, no, it's not like that at all. But then I was thinking about it, and I said, it is exactly that. I choose to be here, I love to be here, and I love to be involved in what goes on around here. And if that makes me a church lady, so to speak, then that's fine, because I believe in what we practice here, and I believe in the direction of this community. And I really think I found a home.
I think EU churches have a wonderful quality of acceptance. It's just easy to be yourself. So bring whatever baggage you have and bring whatever preconceived notions you have and just sit down and take it all in. And I think you'll leave different. You'll leave feeling more like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I know my partner had a really hard time when we first started coming here because she had been raised Pentecostal, and she just kept saying, but it can't always be like this. It can't always be like this. And I didn't understand what she was having a hard time with. And she said, it's just too nice. You know, everybody is okay. They're non-judgmental, and they are just happy to have you there, and they want you to be yourself. So if you're looking for a place that you can be comfortable with who you are, no matter who it is, that's what this church is to me.
It'll be very surprising how open the conversations are, how secular yet sacred the music can be.
Mm-hmm.
And how instead of just rote someone else telling you what is the truth, and this is how it is, and this is what you do, and this is what you don't do, I think that the sense of embracing each person's individual search for what's important to them or what resonates with them is the biggest draw. All humans have always searched for some kind of meaning in life, and that everyone's journey is a sacred journey.
Yes, our journeys are sacred, as are our stories. And I'm privileged to be able to listen and record these stories and make them available to a wider audience. My hope is that they will stimulate our thinking as we look for meaning in our lives. And equally, I hope these stories will diffuse to many who are not UUs, yet are UUs in spirit, but don't yet know about us. If you haven't heard any of the podcasts yet, I hope this morning's service will encourage you to explore the website and become a regular listener, maybe even volunteering to have your story recorded. If you know of someone who is on a spiritual quest and might find the program stimulating, just send them a link to the website. That's a very low-key form of evangelism. We have an open theology and a welcoming community, and in my view, a mission to increase our visibility, share our blessings, and widen the circle. And on that note, let's sing our closing hymn, Circle, written by Harry Chater. You'll find the words in your order of service.